Welcome to TanakhStudy.com. This is Gad Dishi, and together we're studying Sefer Melachim.
Perek Chaf Aleph deals with the parasha of Kerem Navot, and this perek, according to the Septuagint, is not in this place. It's located a perek earlier in order to have the battles against Aram juxtaposed one to the other. In our Masoretic text, we have Perek Chaf Aleph here. In a different lecture, I've explained why that might be the case. But here we have the last pasuk from Perek Chaf, that Melech Yisrael of Achav goes back to his home, Sar Vezaef. He's dispirited and sullen, and we're going to see that phrase repeated soon enough in this perek. That might also be one of the links of keeping these prakim in place. So pasuk Aleph, Vahi Achara Devarim Ha'ele, Kerem Haya Lenavot HaYisraeli Asher BeYisrael, Etzel Hechal Achav Melech Shomron. After these things, there was a vineyard to Navot in Israeli, in Israel, which was near the palace of Achav, the king of Shomron. And the text tells us that Achav is the king of Shomron, or his real palace is in Shomron. This place in Israel that he has is an additional palace. It's a, I don't know if it's the summer home, but it's definitely a satellite palace for the one in Shomron. And this is a fact of his grandeur and his great luxury items that he has as a result of his pact with Tzidon. Vayedaber Achav el Navot lemor, tena li et karmecha, v'hi li legan yarak, ki hu karov etzel beti, v'etena lecha tachtav kerem tov mimenu, im tov be'enecha etena lecha kesef mechir ze. And Achav talks to Navot. Now, even though we just said Achav was Melech Shomron, the pasuk quickly tells us that this conversation somehow takes place on a collegial level. Achav, without his title as king, speaks to Navot and says, give me your vineyard that I can make it into a vegetable garden. He wants to have more green view from his palace. It's the one that's next door to him. And he wants, instead of that, to give Navot a better vineyard than he already has. Or, if he prefers, if Navot prefers, he'll pay him the price for the vineyard. And the response of Navot is quite telling. Vayomer Navot el Achav, Chalila li me'adonai mititi et nachalat avotai lach. And Navot tells Achav, God forbid that I should give my ancestral lands to you. And so from this pasuk, we have a number of different points that we now understand better in regards to Achav's request. First of all, the name of Navot, as Moshe Garcia points out, is perhaps a contraction of Nachalat Avot. He's referring to his ancestral estate, so his name becomes Navot. He represents, in this constellation of Achav and Izeb and Eliyahu, he's the one who perhaps is representing sticking to traditional Judaism, to practices of the Jewish people, as opposed to Achav, who is worshipping the Baal under the influence of Izebel. And this idea of a Gan Yarak, having a vegetable garden, has been suggested that perhaps it's not just a vegetable garden, but rather it would become a place of aesthetic value in which he would be able to then worship the Baal in his place in Israel. And he wanted to make an extension to that, to his house, in the sense of having a garden where he can worship Baal. And that would be one of the reactions of Navot. God forbid that I should give my ancestral plot in order to you to make that Gan Yarak, to make that garden. The way that Navot speaks to Achav is, again, it seems to be palsy, and in fact too much so. Navot tells Achav, and not Achav the Melech, Chalil Ali Mehashem, he invokes God's name. This might be later used against him, but this is his invocation of God in a swear. It's a very serious matter, and he's not going to give his ancestral land to him, to Achav. There's others who would like to view this as a manifestation of the policy called datafundalization. It's a big word that means that the kingdom tries to take over all of the land and be able to have a monopoly over the land, over the real estate, and control the supply of agricultural produce. And this might be one of the manifestations of Achav's doing so. by trying to take over piece by piece the things that are closest to the palace. And Navot is standing up to Achav, and he doesn't address him as the king. He doesn't say, Chalila li me Hashem mititi et nachalat avotai ladoni hamelech, right? And he doesn't have any indication of any reverence, of any respect to Achav as the king. He speaks to him and he tells him, God forbid. He doesn't come up with an excuse. He's not trying to appease Achav whatsoever. Vayavo Achav el beto sar vezaef. Al hadavar asher diber elav Navot ha-Yisraeli vayomer lo eten lecha et nachalat avotai vayishkav al mitato vayasev et panav ve lo achal lahem. So I should point out that Moshe Garcia has a great article on this whole perek worth looking at. But here Achav comes back to his palace, sar vezaef, dispirited and sullen. Again, the same phraseology we had at the end of perek Chaf. And he's all upset because of what Navot told him. And here the pasuk makes a reference of what it is that Navot told him, even though we just had it recorded. And pay attention to the nuance. So yomer lo eten lecha et nachalat avotai. I won't give you my ancestral plot. Now, we know that those weren't the exact words of Navot. Navot said, God forbid, meaning there was some religious aspect to it, of what it was that he was trying to make a statement when he answered Achav. Achav, however, is upset, and the only thing that he heard was, Lo eten lecha et nachalat avotai. And that's why the pasuk repeats what it is that was said by Navot, and we see that the nuance in the reporting is giving us a perspective of what it is that Achav heard, that he only hears, you will not have, I'm not going to give you my ancestral lands, which is something personal against Achav. Vayishkav al mitato, he lies in his bed, and he is turns his face away, and he's not eating. So he's a. It seems to be painted here in a very childlike manner, where Achav is pouting over the fact that Navot is not giving him what he wants, and he's not going to eat, because he's upset. And Izebel arrives, his wife, and tells him, what is this that you're all upset about and you're not eating? And she is being painted here as if she is a very caring wife, wondering why her husband, the king, is not eating. Why is he all upset? Vayedaber eleha, ki yadaber el Navot ha-Yisraeli, va'omar lo, tena li et karmecha bechetzef, o im chafetz ata et nalcha kerem tachtav, vayomer lo eten lecha et karmi. And now, he explains to her that he spoke with Navot the Israeli. And he told him, give me your vineyard for money, or if you'd like, I'll give you a different vineyard in its place. And he told me, I won't give you my vineyard. Now, this time, where the report about what it is that the interchange that took place, again we have a variation from what originally occurred. And in this situation, Achav is trying to make himself look a little bit better in the eyes of his wife, who is expecting him to act in a kingly fashion, and is trying to have him snap out of his childlike reaction. And he presents things in a different light, and he says, I spoke to Navot, and I told him, give me your vineyard for money. If you remember, the offer for money came at the end in the original version, you know, but here he made it into some business deal, nothing personal. And he said then afterwards, or if you want, I can give you a different vineyard. If you recall, the original formulation was, I'll give you a better vineyard, right? Tachtav kerem tov mimenu, which was in Pasuk Bet. Now here he doesn't make that offer clear, that was what he offered to Navot, because he wants to show Izebel that he was trying to be tough, and he managed to hold his own, but still Navot told him, Lo eten lecha et karmi. Again, this time, not only does he leave out the religious aspect of Chalila li me Hashem, but he also leaves out the aspect of Nachalat Avotai, meaning that if we're talking about ancestral lands that have the is basically the cash cow of the family, this is the thing you never sell unless you're in dire straits. You don't get rid of your ancestral holdings. But here he makes it sound to Izebel that there was really no justification for Navot's refusal, no religious grounds, no traditional grounds, no family or economic grounds. He makes it sound as if It was absolutely irrational and simply a insult to the king, to Achav. ותאמר אליו איזבל אשתו, אתה תעשה מלוכה על ישראל, קום אכול לחם ויטב ליבך, אני אתן לך את כרם נבות היזרעאלי. And Izebel tells him, his wife, Izebel. And again, this is always the point of Izebel being his wife, as if this is the part of her nurturing and her caring about her husband. She's trying to help him out. Says, now you are going to become the real king over, be the king over Israel. Get up and eat and be happy. I'm going to give you the vineyard of Nabot Israeli. And how she's going to do this, she doesn't mention. Achav also doesn't ask, and partly because of his willingness to have her handle matters in her own way, which he might understand is from her upbringing, so he should be culpable for things that are going to be happening because he's not inquiring. But basically she's trying to have him snap out of it and to be able to rest assured that she will get him the vineyard of Nabot Israeli. Now, in this context, if we're going to deal with Izebel as getting it, and the idea of Navot's refusal being religiously based, the idea of the Kerem also representing Am Yisrael is something that we find in Yeshayahu and the Kerem Hayada Dodi, in other contexts as well, that Am Yisrael is likened to the vineyard, and therefore in this situation, this idea of him ruling over Israel, of his trying to become the owner of the vineyard, to be able to run the vineyard, is a quest for his being able to really be reigning over Am Yisrael. And at the end of the day, he doesn't succeed in doing that alone. He only does it by joining forces with Melech Sidonim, by marrying with Izebel, and that's how he manages to keep the economy pumped up. And so, as we move on, Izebel shifts into action immediately. There's no pouting. There's no attempt to speak again with Nabot. ותכתוב ספרים בשם אחיו, ותחתום בחותמו, ותשלח ספרים אל הזקנים ואל החורים אשר בעירו, היושבים את נבות. She writes books, meaning orders, letters, in the name of אחיו, and she signs with his signet. And she sends these orders to the elders and to the nobles that are in his city, that are Hayoshvim et Navot, that are living with Navot. Others want to explain that this last phrase, Hayoshvim et Navot, referred to the Zekenim and the Chorim, and that really Navot was a noble and sat together with the elders on tribunals and was a Dayan. He was one of the members of the Bet Din in the city. It's possible that he was held in high esteem, or it could just be that they all lived together. And the point of that being that we're going to see that despite their having lived together and they're all being part of the same city, they're not going to be loyal to him. They're going to end up being loyal to Izebel. And this pasuk is very reminiscent of pasukim in Megillat Esther, you know, that someone signs books off with someone else's signet and they send them off to the various governmental bodies or emissaries in order to have their edict carried out. And there might be some parallels that need to be drawn there. ותכתוב בספרים לאמור, קראו צום, והושיבו את נבות בראש העם. And she, what did she write in these orders? She said you should have a fast be declared, and you should have Navot be seated at the head of the assembly, at the head of the gathering there. והושיבו שניים אנשים בני בליעל נגדו, ועידוהו לאמור, ברכת אלוהים ומלך. And you should also seat two other scoundrels that should testify against him and say that his crime was that he cursed God and the king, as a result of which you should take him out, stone him, and he shall die. And so we have a very cynical use of the judicial system on the part of Izebel. Again, we have also people like to point out that we started with Lo Tachmod. He wanted the vineyard of Navot, and now we've moved on to Lo Taneh Berecha Et Shaker, and we're going to have Lo Tirtzach, Avera Goreret Avera, that people get carried away with what their ambitions are, and they are blinded with the results are and how far they're really ready to go to get them. Now, if we pay attention, the idea of a fast is basically to raise the alarm of the general populace that something terrible has happened, and gives a credence to a certain sense of a national doom. Something is going to happen to everyone unless something is done, and therefore we need to have a quick resolution to this problem. Vayasu anshe iro hazekenim ve'ahorim asher hayoshvim be'iro ka'asher shalcha alehem izebel ka'asher katub basfarim asher shalcha alehem. And the people in his city, his very own city, again, the text is going to repeat it again and again, the elders and the nobles that lived together with him in the same place, in the same city, as Izebel wrote to them, according to the orders that she sent in the letters. Karutzo, v'hoshivu et Navot b'rosh ha'am. They called a fast, and they put Navot at the head of the assembly. V'yavo shnei ha'anashim b'nei Belial, v'yeshvu negdo, and this is the execution, tarte mashma, about what happened to Navot. The two scoundrels came and they sat across from him and they testified, these scoundrels, against Navot, that he, while facing the people, that he has cursed God and the king, as a result of which they took him outside the city and they stoned him with rocks, right? And he died. So there's a great article also by Yair Zakovich on this perek, and he points out very interestingly, again, while it looks like it's an exact execution of the plan of Izebel, there are some variations here that are worth paying attention to. So while the original order of Izebel was that these two scoundrels should testify against Navot, and it should be v'yoshivu shneim anashim b'nei Belial negdo v'yiduhu lemor, they should be against him and facing him when they testify, saying what they're going to say. Here, even the two scoundrels, understanding that this is such a travesty of justice, such a mockery of the judicial system, that even they are unable to do so. And when they sit again, they sit, they're vayeshvu negdo, and when they're doing vayeiduhu, the anshe b'liyahol, they are not able to face Navot and say the lie straight to his face. They need to turn away, and they have to do it neged ha'am lemor berach Navot Elohim v'melech. Again, this idea of his own townsmen being the ones who carry this dastardly plot out is stressed when it's Vayotziu Michutz La'ir. If we have all the time, we talk about Navot, it's Navot HaYisraeli, HaYisraeli, Asher BeYisrael. He is the man of Israel. He is the man of his town. He's dedicated to his location. He's not ready to give up his ancestral plot. He wants to preserve the rights of the locals. He wants to be the one who stands up against the mighty monarchy who's trying to take over the small locals. And at the end of the day, it's the small locals of that very city that are going to carry this out against him. But the text is being sensitive to the fact that because he represents Israel in the true sense, he is not going to be stoned in the city. He's only going to have to be taken outside the city, because it's too much of a travesty, even under these circumstances, to have him be killed within the city of which he was looking to preserve and protect and represent. Well, once he's already dead, Vayishtechu el Izebel emor, sukal Navot vayamot. And they sent to Izebel a very terse report without any fanfare. There's not even an attempted rejection of her initial order, just complete compliance. And when it's finally done, very cold, Navot was stoned and died. Vahi kishmoa Izebel kisukal Navot vayamot, vatomer Izebel elechav, kum rashet kerem Navot ha-Yisraeli, asher me'en latet lecha bechesef, ki en Navot chai ki met. And when Izebel heard that Navot was stoned and died, Izebel tells Achav, arise and take possession, inherit, go take over the vineyard of Navot HaYisraeli, still called Navot HaYisraeli, who refused to give it to you for money. which for her made no sense. It was just an affront to the king. Because Navot is no longer alive, but rather he's dead. Now, it's not very clear why in the judicial world that the minute that the Navot is killed, suddenly it becomes possible for the king to take possession of the vineyard. Some want to suggest because the claim was, the false claim against him was that he cursed the god and the king, and therefore as an affront to the king should be able to make reparations to himself for the pigiyah and his kavod, and he should be able to take over the vineyard. The whole idea of what it is that was charged of him, some would like to say because of his use of God's name, invocating the swear of Chalil Ali Mehashem, and therefore that was an inappropriate use perhaps of God's name in that context, and therefore it was a true statement that really Navot was guilty, both of being disrespectful to the king and also for making a misuse of God's name. If that was the case, it certainly wasn't Izebel's understanding of the situation. As we pointed out before, when Achav reported what Navot said, he left out both the aspects of the Nachalat Avot and also in regards to the mentioning of God's name. And therefore, even though it might be for a reader that it's ironic that Izebel manages to pick up perhaps on some inappropriateness that Navot did, it was totally in an unknowing way. Izebel had no knowledge of what it is that Navot had said. Vahi kishmoa Achav kimet Navot, vayakom Achav v'rez del kerem Navot ha-Yisraeli l'rishto. And when Achav heard that Navot died, he got up to go down to kerem Navot and take possession of it. Now, again, Achav doesn't ask any questions, and very curiously is silent throughout this episode. It's been suggested by many that his silence is his compliance. It is his sealing of his faith that he basically really knows what goes on behind the scenes. After all, why does he give Izebel his stamp, have his carte blanche to run the kingdom? Apparently that there is some idea that she is the one who's really pulling the strings in what goes on in Malchut Yisrael. And that's why it is that she's the one who's carrying it out, somewhat with the knowledge, although not explicit, of Achav, knowing what she's doing. And now, after that entire interchange, now God decides it's time to intervene. He calls in Eliyahu HaTishbi, that we haven't seen in the whole beginning part of the Perek, and we haven't seen him already since the end of Perek Yotet, where the switch was supposed to take over, and Elisha was inaugurated to be the one to take over, and became his shamash instead. Now Eliyahu Navi is here, and Elisha is nowhere to be seen, but Eliyahu has a job now. God tells him, "Kum red lekrat Achav melech Yisrael asher b'shomron, hine b'kerem Navot asher yarad sham l'rishto." Yarad sham l'rishto. So he says, "Get up." The same way that Izebel tells Achav, get up, God tells Eliyahu, get up and go down, just like it said before, Vayakum Achav la redet. Now Eliyahu is kum red, lekrat Achav, go towards Achav, Asher v'Shomron, the king of Israel from Shomron, where he should have been, but he's not. Rather, he is now in the place of the vineyard of Navot, where he's going to try to take possession of. But the Bartai Elav Lemor, Ko Amar Adonai, הנצחתה וגם ירשתה, ודיברת אליו למור, כה אמר אדוני, במקום אשר לקקו הכלבים את דם נבות, ילוקו הכלבים את דמך גם אתה. Then you should tell him the following. So said the Lord, have you also murdered and also inherit? In other words, you think that you're going to get away with this travesty, that you've managed to murder a man, and you want to also take over his possessions? You tell him in the name of God, that in the same place that the dogs lapped up Navot's blood, the dogs are going to lap up his blood as well. Later, we're going to see that Achav dies and that he is indeed bleeding, but it's not in the same place as Navot, as Kerem Navot, and therefore, it's not outside of Israel where Navot was killed, but rather a different location. And so this nevuah perhaps doesn't come true. And I think that the proper reading wasn't what I just translated, but rather, if we look closely at the words, it's Kol Amar Hashem Bimkom Asher Lakakua Kalavim Adam Nevuot. It's Bimkom, not Bammakom. It's not the very place, but rather instead of the dogs lapping up the blood of Nevuot, or rather as a price for the dogs lapping up the blood of Dam Nevuot, so too your blood will be lapped up by the dogs. Vayomer Achav El Eliyahu, Hamsaatni Oivi, Vayomer Matzati, Yan Hitmakercha La'asot Hara Be'enei Adonai. And the text doesn't give us the initial rendezvous between Achav and Eliyahu, and whether or not Eliyahu actually says over this nevuah. We already have other instances where we were questioning whether Eliyahu fulfills, or we've seen that he didn't fulfill what it is that Hashem told him to do, at least not word for word. And here it seems to be that Eliyahu goes and meets up with Achav, but Achav opens up the conversation and says, "Has my enemy found me?" Again, he looks at Eliyahu as an enemy. So if we had any doubts about whether or not that was the relationship between them after he came back from Har HaKarmel, still now Achav does view him as an enemy. And he says, "V'yomer matzati," Eliyahu says, "Yes, I have found you. I found you. Why am I here? Because of your addiction, of your commitment for doing evil in the eyes of God." Now, this is not the sentence that God asked him to say. It's not clear if this is the second round of speaking. It seems to be the opening, right? Otherwise, it seems it's kind of strange for Achav to have heard his fate be sealed and the dog's going to lick his blood when he dies, and then say, "Oh, did you find me?" It doesn't seem to be the logical sequence. Hineni mevi elecha ra'a ubi'arti acharecha v'chrati le'achav mashtin bekir ve'atzur ve'azuv be'Yisrael. And a very familiar formula that we've had before, both for Yerovam and for Baasha. God says, "I'm going to bring you the just desserts for your evil, and I'm going to make a clean sweep of you. I'm going to make an end to you. I'm going to wipe out every last wall, pissing the homeless, lost souls of Achav's the family, and make sure there's no remains of it whatsoever." ונתתי את ביתך כבית ירובעם בן נבט וכבית באשה בן אחיה אל הכעס אשר הכעסת ותחתי את ישראל. I'm going to make your whole family, your whole dynasty, just like that of Yerovam and as that of Baasha. El hakas means al hakas, for all of the anger that you've angered God, and you've made Israel sin. וגם לאיזבל דיבר אדוני לאמור, הכלבים יאכלו את איזבל בתל ישראל. And there's some parentheses here of, and also about Izebel, you should know that God said that the dogs are going to lick up, are going to eat Izebel in Chel Israel. Now he goes back to Achav, Hamet na Achav ba'ir yachlu haklavim, v'hamet basadeh yachlu of hashamayim. And the people who die for Achav in the city will be eaten by the dogs, and the ones who die in the fields will be eaten by the birds. And again, this is exact formulation that we've had for the other dynasties that didn't follow God, and so too Achav's dynasty is now destined for doom. Rak lo haya ki Achav asher hitmaker la'asot hara b'enei Adonai asher hesata oto Izebel ishto. And the text now giving us some characterization of there hasn't, just you should know, or indeed, no one else was as bad as Achav, who was so dedicated, so addicted to doing evil in the eyes of God. And then while condemning Achav, now the text gives us an alleviating circumstance, that really he was incited to do evil by his wife, Izebel, who came from a different culture, had a different way of doing things, believed in the Baal, instituted the Baal worship, the Asherah worship, had her own Nevi'im. She basically did not have this idea of the king being limited in his power. That the Baal was the one who made him a semi-god, a demigod, and therefore he was able to do anything he wanted, which is not the model of kingship that we have for Am Yisrael. the Malach of Kingship from Israel is a Nagid, a governor who is running things in the name of God and who has limitations and prohibitions in regards to his own behavior, and he's subjugated to the laws of the Torah, and that's why this issue of Navot could only have been handled by a Izevel. ויתאב מאוד ללכת אחרי הגירויים ככל אשר עשו האמורי אשר הוריש אדוני מפני בני ישראל. And as opposed to telling us that he's done evil just like Yerovam ben Nevat, now the text tells us that he has done very many abominations and gone after the Gilulim. Again, a derogatory name for the idols, Glalim of the of dung, just like the Amori did, which God had to vanquish from Bnei Israel. And so this is already a hint to a punishment that's going to be affecting the whole nation, and that's simply the house of Achav. If we look back in regards to the formulations of Sar v'Zaef, at the end of Perek Chaf, Achav was told by the Navi, who came up with the ruse, that v'hayta nafshecha tachat nasho v'amcha tachat amo, that something is going to affect not only him, but also the entire nation, and he is Sar v'Zaef, he is sullen and upset about that. And later when we see that he's Sar v'Zaef, he's Sar v'Zaef over not being able to get the vineyard. In some level, that use of Sar v'Zaef in both those situations is a little bit of a comedy to show how Achav does not have a sense of proportions. But here, when he's being compared to the Emori, we have this idea that really it's going to affect all of Am Yisrael. V'hi chishmo Achav et hadvarim ha'ele, v'yikra begadav, v'yasem sak al besaro, v'yatzom, v'yishkav basak, v'yhalech at. And when Achav heard these things, he ripped his clothes, and he put on sackcloth, and he fasted, and he slept in the sackcloth, and he walked about subdued, walked slowly. And so this idea of Achav perhaps making tshuva, or at least he's expressing his sorrow. It doesn't say that he stopped worshiping the Baal, but he's expressing his sorrow. He understands that it's going to happen what Eliyahu told him. He believes in Eliyahu, he believes in the Navi Hashem, and he understands that really his kingdom is coming to an end. So when he rips his clothes, this is avilut about himself, about his kingdom, and the very bed that he was in before, where he was pouting, he is now replacing his sheets with sackcloth, and that's the bed where he is now sleeping in order to show his subjugation to God. He is making a fast. Maybe he found out, or he understands that that's one way of expressing his remorse, but it also is parallel to the fast that was called on the people of Israel when they are going to sentence Navot. And then, after God sees this, he gives Eliyahu Navi another prophecy. Haraita ki nechna achav melefanai. Yan ki nechna mipanai lo avi hara'a b'yamav bime beno avi hara'a al beto. Have you seen how Achav has humbled himself before me? And because he's done so, it's because he's humbled himself, I'm not going to bring this disaster upon him during his life, but rather I'm going to bring it upon him in the time of his son. And so the same way that we've had the staying of punishment in Yerovam's case and in Baasha's case to the next generation, and sometimes even beyond the next generation, so till here, Achav's actions have postponed the decree of the disaster coming through his life, but rather will affect his son. And this nevuah that Hashem is telling Eliyahu is perhaps part of a larger scale of how is the proper way of trying to have Achav reform. Eliyahu tried his way with the light show at the Har HaKarmel, which failed, and when he went to Har Chorev and was shown another revelation where the idea was called the Mamadaka, Eliyahu rejected that message, and now God is showing him that the abilities of Hashem to have Achav reform are more powerful and more effective than the ones that Eliyahu was making use of. And as we finish this perek, the next perek is going to deal with the ensuing battles with Aram that will indeed be the end of Achav's life, and will bring an end to Melachim Aleph.